Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The bounce pass like that and throw it down with that type of, you know, visceral. I was pretty impressed with that. I love the bounce pass. I mean, you see KD, look at, watch out below. KD's looking like, okay, I think I can get this. And all of a sudden, the ball just continues to ascend. And here comes Giannis. I mean, he's freaking 2 feet above the rim. I mean, it's like crazy. And on the way down, he just throws it down. I thought that was a hell of a highlight. I thought it was unbelievable. Just the timing. Steph Curry with the bounce pass. It was nice, Dibs. It was really nice.
From a drama perspective, throughout the course of the weekend, the focus was on Anthony Davis, who only played about 5 minutes, and then everyone's kind of making a lot to do about probably nothing. The photo, as Kevin Durant is accepting his All-Star Game MVP award, the photo only features one other player from the game up close watching him get that award. That player is none other than Kyrie Irving, who many have speculated will leave Boston, go to the Knicks, and join Kevin Durant at Madison Square Garden. We're not necessarily getting into that right now, but as much as Durant hates it, this is the state of the NBA. People are interested in your product. People are interested in you, and therefore they're not just going to watch your games, but they're also going to speculate on your future. You sign a 5-year deal, no one's going to speculate on your future, right? No one's worried about the future of Buster Posey because he's locked up. People are worried about the future of Madison Bumgarner because this is the final year of his contract. That's how business works, and more so in the NBA than anywhere else, because player movement and everything that's happened in the last 3, 4, 5 years, that's part of the excitement of watching the NBA. It changes on a consistent basis. But while everyone's kind of looking at KD's future, at Anthony Davis's future, Steph and Giannis were getting pretty close to each other throughout the course of that game. The focus is on the alley-oop, but those two hooked up quite a bit. Now, Giannis has got 2 years left on the deal, and I'm not saying they're trying to date, but in terms of players in this game sidling up next to each other, Giannis and Steph found themselves next to each other quite a bit over the course of the weekend.
Yes, and I think the only one that would be close would be the Jokic and Steph moments, because they had a little interchange yesterday pregame where Jokic was like trying to guard him outside, a little one-on-one during shoot-around, and you can see that they obviously enjoy each other as well. That's partly why I love the game, is for the All-Star weekend, these players are allowed to just enjoy each other, be colleagues, be friends, even though throughout the course of the year they do that and then they're criticized, whether it's jersey swap or it's, you know, a post-game Instagram picture or the banana boat, all this other stuff we criticize these guys for. It's good at the All-Star game where you can have some conspiracy theories about who might join whom. I saw a stat, Joe, and tell me what you think of this, that there's going to be, I think, between 37 and 40% of the league will be free agents this offseason. Think about that. If 40% of the NBA players switch teams, is that good for the game or is that ultimately bad for it?
Well, it depends on who it is. There are a lot of guys at the bottom of the rung that we don't even care about that'll be free agents. The key for the sport is probably every summer having at least 2 or 3 marquee names that are going to be on the move. This year, we know that Kyrie is going to be a free agent. We know that Klay is going to be a free agent. Right there, that's good enough. That's good enough for your storylines, but you throw Kevin Durant into the mix and everyone else, the Anthony Davis potential trade and all that good stuff, suddenly you've really got something cooking. By and large, you need a balance. You need guys like Steph who want to be lifers for their team, and then you need the guys who are willing to move, because right now, whether people want to believe it or not, that's the NBA's model. That's your model. You are in the news every day, not because of what's happening on the court. Right? You've got Harden's streak and you've got Russ's streak, and those are things to talk about. But by and large, the Warriors, what they do on a nightly basis, isn't going to grab national headlines because we're just used to it. People are used to them being the one seed. And everyone in basketball wants to complain that the Warriors and Kevin Durant broke the game and that it's not going to be competitive and we know it's a foregone conclusion. Well, if that's the case, then you've got to be able to embrace the talk of the player movement and all the speculation. Because if you're not going to talk about that and you're not going to talk about who's going to win, because we already know it's a, quote, foregone conclusion, what else is there to talk about?
Yeah,
off the field crime?
Yeah,
you certainly don't want stuff like that,
right,
which,
right.
You know, the sport's done a good job. But
right.
By and large, This is what you're battling.
You're right, Joe. And I think that Giannis, he's going to be a lifer. I think that he's the guy that Dibs talk about, how Klay Thompson, he'll stay here. And I don't know about the hometown discount, but Klay Thompson wants to be here for life. I think Giannis is a guy that wants to be in Milwaukee for life. He's look like he's going to be look like they're the best team in the East. They may come out. He's like, okay, the money's good. He's not necessarily American cat, so he's not all tied up in all that other different things.
The glitz and the glamour, yeah.
Glitz and the glamour. He seems like he's just pretty buttoned up. I think that this free agency is good. I think it's great because it gives fans don't care necessarily about the name. They care about the jersey. And now they're like, look, if you can go get another guy that could be a rim protector and Steph and do those things, people don't care. They want another person there. And trust me, guys talk all the time. They're like, look, hey, you if Steph pick up the phone, someone tells him, hey, I want out. You don't think Steph can go to Bob Myers and say, dude, he want to get bought out. This is a guy. Guys talk about it in every single sport. Guys have different relationships with one another, and they talk about what a person, what he wants. Coaches say, hey, is that guy happy? You never know what goes on behind doors in all sports.
And Joe Lacob, you know, is going to be aggressive, whether it's Giannis who comes free in a couple years or if they can throw their hat in the ring for Anthony Davis when he comes free. Joe Lacob is going to do everything he can to spend as much as he has to keep this product being as elite as possible, because that Chase Center, it's not cheap, Coach. And as much as you were talking about how much revenue they're going to generate from the other buildings, and that's
I want winners.
Probably accurate. Yeah, you all of a sudden don't want to move there and be 43 and 39 with a bunch of no-names in 5 years.
One of the most underrated aspects of the weekend, Steph was meeting with the media, I think it was Saturday, maybe Friday, and they asked him if this was going to be, yeah, it's probably Friday, asked him if this was going to be his last three-point contest, to which he lost to the guy from Brooklyn. It was a fun time. And he said, yeah, this is going to be the last one. And then quietly, Warrior PR was like, San Francisco 2023. He's like, yeah, I'd like to revise my answer to I don't know. Because even though the Warriors don't have the All-Star game for 2023, the next three are determined. The anticipation is that with the new building, they'll end up getting it. And Steph, obviously, it'll be later in his career, but you'd want to see him out there shooting threes. All right, we've got plenty more in store. Vegas dumped a ton of great baseball information out there yesterday. Two things specifically pertaining to the Giants. I'm going to throw a question out there for you right now. Prison bet, life is on the line. Buster Posey, over or under 9.5 total home runs. That is available in Vegas right now. That is part of what we will be discussing next.
Joe Lowandibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome to The Money Spot, brought to you by Cash Creek Casino. It's Cash Creek's Year of Fortune. Someone will win $8,888 at 6 p.m. and 9 p.m. every Saturday and Sunday. Visit cashcreek.com. Great to have you with us today on this President's Day. It's Joe Lowandibs, 95.7 The Game. At 8:30, we will be joined by John Heyman, MLB insider for the MLB Network, on the latest regarding Bryce Harper's free agency. At 9:10 a.m., you will hear from the number two overall pick in the 2018 Major League Baseball draft. That's right, San Francisco Giants catcher Joey Bart at 9:10. Sam Amick on the NBA All-Star Game at 9:35. Yesterday, in Las Vegas, at the Westgate Las Vegas Superbook, they unloaded thousands of Major League Baseball bet opportunities for the upcoming season. There is some traditional stuff, such as World Series odds. The Giants find themselves at 200-1. Only six teams are worse: Seattle, Texas, Miami, Detroit, Kansas City, and Baltimore. The Giants find themselves at 100-1 to win the National League. That is tied with Arizona for second worst, Miami coming in dead last. The Giants find themselves at 40-1 to win the NL West, tied for last with Arizona, and they have a season win total of 73.5. So you can bet, will the Giants win more or less than 73.5 games this season? But there were some interesting player props I wanted to get into first here. First and foremost surrounds future Hall of Fame catcher in the eyes of many, Buster Posey. He'll be 32 years old next month. There's a prop on how many home runs he will hit this season. Buster Posey's home run over-under is set at 9.5 for the catcher. Do you see him hitting 10 or more home runs this season, because if you do, there's a lot of money to be made. Now, remember, over the last two seasons, Posey has hit 5 home runs last year in 105 games, and the year before that, 12 home runs. It's been in decline every year since 2014. 22, 19, 14, 12, and 5. Bounce back year for Posey?
Yes, bounce back year, Joe. I'm going over 9.5 home runs because you figure if he stays healthy, and I know it's a pretty big if when you're coming off of hip surgery,
Yeah. You
know he's going to play a healthy dose of first base. So let's just say you throw out last year where you played 105 games, but before that, 140, 146, 150, 147, 148. That's all pretty consistent. So let's give him 140 games, 10 home runs in 140 games. That'd be one every 14. That's a home run basically every 3 weeks. I would be hard pressed to bet against that. So I'm going to go over 9.5 home runs and say he gets a Baker's dozen, Joe. He gets 13 this year.
You need him starting every road Rockies game. Every single game at altitude, you need him in the lineup at first base, getting 4 or 5 cuts a game. 9.5 home runs. How do you see it? Do you go over or under for Buster Posey this season?
Well, I think Buster Posey wants to play this year and play more games than he did last year. I think we can all agree there, and I think that Buster probably not necessarily is going to be on opening day. He may not be. It's going to be close. Had hip surgery. I don't see Buster Posey turning on the ball early. Don't see him turning on it often. If you're understanding where you're at in your career and you've been breaking down year after year, now it's about maintenance. Now it's about where's my value? Buster Posey's value is behind the mound, also at first base. You know, he's okay. And also you look at it just his leadership, and he's a great on-base getter. So you look at Buster, I think it's under. I think because of the fact that he's looking to say, I want to continue to play. I want to stay healthier this year. I don't think he's going to be turning on the ball, and he's not going to be needing to go for home runs. I don't think it behooves him. I don't think he's going to challenge it. I think it's an under.
Wow. You projected 12 on your own. I went through, not all, but I went through a lot of the projection systems, Fans, Steamer, all that stuff that's out there. Most have Posey projected at exactly 11 home runs. 11. Which would give you 1.5 to spare.
Yeah, I got him at 13. Baker's dozen. I think he gets
Baker's
to 13.
Baker's dozen, I'm sorry. You did say that.
13. Yeah. 13, and that's, I mean, geez, the way Lowe laid it out there, though, early on in the year, especially if the hip is not 100%,
that's
you can't
point.
See him firing into the ball. Plus, let's be honest about this weather. This is not home run hitting weather. And I know April is still a good 7 or 8 weeks away from now, but if we get the same sort of year that we got last year weather-wise, baseball had more rainouts than they had in 10 years. Colder weather means, you know, fewer home runs for everybody. That might hurt him as well as far as early on in the season
just
goes.
Don't think you think he's going to try to really jump on these balls early. I just don't see it. And you, this guy, they want Buster to be there. Put butts in the seat. Buster is their calling card. This is a guy, Coach, hey, man, we don't need that. Get him on base. Hey, Buster, look, we don't need you to go bring people in. We need you to get on base, and let's try to knock you around the pond. So I just don't see him necessarily jumping on a lot of balls this year.
Keep in mind, maybe it's something we can do between now and the start of the season. We'll get some bets going, because there are definitely a few I'm going to need to be able to, shall we say, engage on a daily basis with this ball club. If it's going to be a struggle, so be it. Still tune in, still have a good time, but this is why betting can play such a huge role in interest. Everybody's interested when you're winning 73 games in an 82-game regular season for the National Basketball Association. This one right here, you might need to go into it with a little action. Chilton Auto Body text line 95795. Over, under 9.5 home runs for Buster Posey this season. Here's the one I'm thinking about firing on. I'll give you two. One we're not going to discuss that much. Crush Davis's home run total, 38. Will he eclipse 38 home runs this season? You stay healthy. I see it. I mean, each of the last 3 years in Oakland, he's hit, 42 or more? I think he hit, 48 last season.
Right.
So, again, barring injury, but Crush Davis, I like the over on that. Then there's this one. Madison Bumgarner, over under 10.5 wins this season. Now, 10.5 is going to seem like a lot when you think back to last season. He went 6-7. In a grand total of 129 innings pitched. The year before that, 4-9. So Bumgarner's only won 10 games over the last two seasons. But again, broke his hand on the comebacker at the end of spring training. That knocked him out for a few months. And then the year before that, the dirt bike injury, in Colorado, knocking him out for a large portion of the season. Does he stay healthy this year? That's number one. And number two, I did confirm this with Vegas. If he is traded to the American League, the wins and the stats all start over again if you change leagues. But Vegas scores that by combining. So you win five games with the Giants, but then get traded to the Yankees at the deadline and go on to win six games. You get the grand total. You get 11. That would put you over. And that, this guy's pitching for a contract. He's in a contract year. You got to figure as a competitor like him to have been banged up each of the last 2 years and not been out there. If he can stay healthy. And remember, it's two fluke injuries. The dirt bike was a fluke injury and the comebacker was a fluke injury. You keep it buttoned up. It's not like it's, you know, elbow tendonitis or anything like that. I think he can get to 11. I know that that's extraordinarily optimistic given the fact that he's probably not going to get a ton of run support. But if you move him at the deadline, it's either you're going to give him the contract or you're going to move him, right? If he's not going to get moved now, you could play this and you could gamble on it. And if they move him before the season even starts, damn, you end up on a contender. Over under 10.5, I think this is the one I'm going to be investing in. Your thoughts?
It's an interesting one because there's two things looming, one positive, one negative, that can really affect this. Obviously, the positive would be getting traded to a contender. The negative would be another injury, because if he gets hurt, you're done. You're not going over. It's kind of like the Johnny Cueto one, I think. Was that last year you were... was that 2 years ago? That was last year, I think.
I lost that one. I want to say it was 2 years ago, but he didn't have a great season. Whatever it was, it was a loss. Let me look that up.
It was 2 years ago. Definitely wasn't last
These years, they go by so quick, yeah, Love. Sometimes I forget. And Johnny Cueto obviously hurt. So if you're dealing with Bumgarner, it was one of those things where he couldn't get it going.
Right.
Cueto couldn't get it going. With Bumgarner, I think that I would go on the over at 10.5 and hope that he stays healthy. And he either gets the new deal or he gets traded somewhere else. Because if the Giants are estimated to win 73.5, that's the Vegas over-under. Would Bumgarner, if they get 73 wins, let's just say, how many of those would come from Bumgarner? 12 or 13? Yeah. So I would definitely lean toward the over on that one.
Yeah, I say it's a no, and it's a hard no. It's a hard pass. Now, if he gets traded, you could see this thing start to shape up toward his way. But if he doesn't, he just doesn't have the bats. He doesn't have the people behind him. And so you look at it, and he's going to be in those low-scoring games. I just don't see it happening because of the fact, insignificant amount of bats that can win and manufacture runs. So I look at this as I would say it's an under.
That's today's Take Your Pick poll question brought to you by FH Daily Chevrolet. It's up on the website now, 957thegame.com. Will Madison Bumgarner win more than 10 games in 2019? Cueto went 8-8 two seasons ago. That was the year I had that bet because he opened like 3-0. Three starts, three wins, cakewalk. And then he couldn't get a win for about a month and then eventually ended up getting hurt because he only pitched 147 innings that year. But that thing was dead to rights. There was an injury suffered that took him all the way to the All-Star break, if memory serves me correctly.
Might have been a blister, as I recall.
Was dead in the water after such a hot start. Last year only went 3-2 before they shut him down. The Bumgarner one's the one I'm studying the most because if he gets traded, you know he's going to a contender. And if he ends up on a contender, he's rejuvenated.
Oh, yeah.
The idea that he's pitching for a new contract this season. We have been talking about a new contract for this guy for like 4 years. Every single year it's been, when are you going to revisit this with the agent? Is there going to be disgruntlement at some point? There was none of it. We really just got here to the final year. So you're either going to pay or you're going to trade. But if you get traded at the deadline, I mean, dang, you end up with the Yankees. The Yankees are projected, I believe, to have more wins than anyone in baseball this season. They're 4 or 5 games ahead of Boston. The thought process is that Boston won the title. There's a slight regression. And then there's the Yanks and the Astros as like the top of the food chain with Cleveland nearby in the American League. In the National League, the NL East is extraordinarily tight, but a lot of people are waiting on the future of Bryce Harper, when he's going to sign. John Heyman is going to join us in about an hour to talk about that at 8:30. In the Central, it's all about the Cardinals. I was looking at the Pagoda projections. Cody, did you see this? The Cubs have the lowest Pagoda projection in the National League Central. The lowest. They are projected to finish worst in the NL Central. Can someone help me out with why that is? Did the Cubs get that bad that fast? I was blown away by that. Below Milwaukee, below everybody in that division.
I don't get it either, because the Pirates didn't do anything and the Reds are getting better, but the Cubs didn't lose anyone, and I know they're trying to add Harper, but to finish 80-82 is just mind-blowing to me.
What are we making of the Harper situation right now? All weekend, you can tell that virtually every report you're getting is Scott Boras, the agent for Bryce Harper, giving every updated detail to the reporter so they'll throw it out there and do his bidding. Well, there's talk now that the Phillies are in the lead, 10 years, and just over $300 million. So it would surpass the 10-year, $300 million deal he turned down from Washington a few months ago. If that's the case, it almost feels as if they're doing everything they can to make sure there isn't any egg on their face regarding what happened with Washington a few months back.
Right, and the fact that he reportedly had a 10-year, $300 million deal already out there that he said no to. So if you're Boras, you can't come back and say, yeah, my client accepted a deal 10 years and 290, because then it's egg on the agent's face as well as embarrassing for the player. So maybe they're just holding out for the last possible dollar to put it over $300 million. I get the feeling that the news will break either today, late in the afternoon East Coast time, or tomorrow. I think it's coming, and it's going to be Philadelphia that gets Bryce Harper. I'm wondering if they're not going to hold it off on today because today is a holiday, if they might just wait till tomorrow to where they're going to have the spotlight to themselves. But I think the news is coming in the next 24 hours.
Speaking of timing out the news, shout out the NFL and Colin Kaepernick for getting that deal done on Friday afternoon heading into a holiday weekend,
right?
So that minimal impact would be shown. Did you see that? What did you end up thinking of the details that he has settled? He has settled his case. He and Eric Reed are done going after the NFL.
Yeah, that he settled. I'd love to see the details. I want to know what the NFL settled on, what was, you know, behind it. It's going to be interesting to see, because it's going to come out. I think people are waiting in with great anticipation to see. But the NFL, you talk about it, Joe, they do a great job of news dumping, especially when it comes to weekend. And then they have a 3-day weekend with President's Day being today. So, yeah, I think it's interesting. I think that they wanted to get it behind them, and now they're on to Cincinnati. But it's interesting that Eric Reed and both of them just settled.
There's a confidentiality agreement, so the thought process is that the information shouldn't get out, but it probably will. Early projections say $75 million. They settled with him for $75 million.
$75 million to Colin. I wonder what Eric got. But that's when you look at it, you see it. It must, where there's smoke, there's fire. So there was a reason why they settled. Colin Kaepernick, understand, his better years are behind him. I look at Colin Kaepernick. I have no earlier. Now, I did want to see Colin back in the league. No question, I did. But now it's been 3 years, Joe. I have no desires to see this guy. I think that he wouldn't necessarily come out and have success. The guy's been out of football, and people to think that he can come back in and dominate the league. No, he was a top 20 quarterbacks when he was on his way out. And so now to say, hey, here's this guy that's been away from the game, he can come in and dominate and play at that high level, I have no interest now to seeing him play. So
yeah,
good for him.
I have interest in seeing him play for that very reason, to see whether or not he still has it or not. Because there's been, you know, the time has gone by to where it seems like he would be over the hill, or it seems like he wouldn't be able to play. But let's see it. Let's have somebody bring him into camp. Let's see what you can do in August.
Why do you want to? I mean, so you're looking forward to see what? I mean, the guy has been playing 3 years.
Maybe he can revive his career. Maybe he's good enough to be somebody's backup. You look around the NFL rosters, and there's some hung teeth out there, as you would like to say. And I can't imagine that he wouldn't be as good as some of the backups we see, especially during the exhibition season.
Naturally, the screaming match started after the news came out. Now everyone's trying to figure out the number. Projections are somewhere in the neighborhood of $75 million that he settled for, but who knows how much of that is true. The anti-Kaepernick side said it's all about the money. That's what they said. They said, you had this cause, and if you really were going after the NFL, you would have seen this all the way through. You would have taken them to court, and you would have put them on the stand, and you would have aired their dirty laundry, and you would have seen it through. So the fact that you settled means that it was all about the money from the beginning. What do you say to those who throw that out there in the anti-Kaepernick camp?
I understand. I can understand where they're coming from when you think about, hey, look, this guy has a cause, and if you have a cause, then go all the way. You know, go all the way with it. I look at certain things that happen in our great country. When you talking about in the, you know, the 60s and stuff, there was, you know, I forget her name now, the young lady, she was fighting for equality for women. And the Justice Department, and, you know, they had to went to Supreme Court, and she did it because there was a man that was getting discriminated because he was taking care of doing house care, taking care of his mom, elderly woman. So they used reverse discrimination, and that's how he was ended up, because they wanted to tax him because they weren't trying to give him his exemption. So I think that, but it wasn't necessarily for money. It was just for equality. So, yeah, I think that there's a lot of people out there that can look at it and say, God, if this is really for equality and to do those things, see it out. Let them be exposed for what they are, if this is what it's about. I can understand that. And I can understand also Colin's situation where this guy is saying, you know what? I'm getting my money. I would have been making that type of money. I was blackballed. These are the things that happened. So, hell, I'm going to take care of myself and take care of my family, and I'm still going to use this money that I can go out and do good. I can go out and I can help the cause. I can put millions behind it. He's already given millions behind it. So I can see both sides, but I do see the naysayers, why they have that reason.
Yeah, and it's easy to be a naysayer and say that, but what would you do if you're in that situation? Because if you take it all the way to the house, and it's, let's say they don't resolve this for 5 years, by the time it goes to court and you either win or lose, and then it's appealed and you either win or lose, it could be 5 to 10 years. You might not get one red cent in this case. And all what? So you could expose the NFL. And ultimately, you could do more good to the cause with $50 million. Because the lawyers get a third, you know, at least. So they're getting that 25.
They're getting their taste.
Yeah, you get your 50
That's
million.
That's one thing that we don't need a confidentiality clause to figure out. We know exactly that they're getting paid.
I mean, it might have been pro bono at the start, but once the settlement comes in, they do get their piece. So for me, you can do more good with the money now than taking down, quote unquote, the NFL, which, by the way, wouldn't be taken down. You might be able to take a pound of flesh from them, but it's not like you're going to break the league and put them out of business.
No, you're absolutely right. It's interesting to see, because Eric Reed is one of the guys that still, you know, for a while he stayed in it, though, and Carolina still signed him. And people were wondering, what is Carolina doing? Here's an ownership and a team that says, you know what, even in spite of you having a lawsuit against the National Football League, we're still going to bring you in. And I think they redid his contract, and this guy, he played well. So, and he looked like he's going to end up sticking in Carolina.
From former San Francisco 49ers to potential future San Francisco 49ers, the great Mel Kiper has his latest mock draft out. Are we ready to dissect some of Mel's musings?
I think we are.
Pick number one to the Arizona Cardinals. Mel Kiper has Ohio State defensive end Nick Bosa. Nick Bosa going number one overall to the Arizona Cardinals. Let me ask this, because this is the big discussion regarding Bosa and the Cardinals. If the Cardinals run a 3-4 and Bosa is a traditional 4-3 outside rusher, a traditional 4-3 defensive end, does this make sense? Mel even says in his breakdown, this is Vance Joseph, the defensive coordinator for the Cardinals. Quote, 4-3 college ends, they grow to be outside backers. It's a learned ability. So he makes it seem as if it's really not that big of a deal. Guys that play defensive end in college can make the transition to outside linebacker in a 3-4 scheme. How difficult would that be?
Well, I think what they would do with the young Bosa, Joe, in situations early, they'll have him rush. So there's a lot of linebackers in the 3-4. They drop into coverage, and sometimes they come off. So that's what makes the 3-4 so deadly, because they can bring pressure. They can drop into coverage. And I think what they'll do early in the 3-4, since it's a 3-4 and he's not accustomed to that, what you mean by that, there's three down linemen, and then there's four linebackers. You have the Mike, the Sam, the Will, and the Jack, and the Buck. So you have four linebackers in a 3-4. So when he's playing outside backer, what they would do, though, at times they reduce it. So what you do is you have one guy slide over and come down, and now you can put two guys to his side. So now the guard is covered and the tackle's covered. So it still looks sort of like a solid on that side. So he'll still get the one-on-one matchup, and he'll still be able to come off the end like in a 4-3, because he's got two guys to his side. So usually four down linemen, and now you're talking about three down linemen, but you can reduce certain fronts to make it look sort of like that 4-3 on one side of the particular defense. So it'd be interesting. I think that they will hide him, Joe, early. They'll have him, you know, they'll do certain things, but he can adjust. The guy's athletic. He can run, but it's going to definitely be an adjustment factor for him, especially getting out into space, because a lot of guys has played in a 4-3, putting their hand in the dirt, and now you're asking them to drop into coverage, and they feel kind of awkward being out there. So I think they'll get a lot of that in training camp, a lot of that in the OTAs, wherever he is, and they can work with him.
Keep in mind that Vance Joseph, the new Arizona Cardinals defensive coordinator, who would be tasked with converting Nick Bosa from a 4-3 DN to a 3-4 outside linebacker, did this very thing just last year in Denver as the head coach of the Broncos. They drafted Bradley Chubb, a 4-3 defensive end out of NC State, with a top 10 selection, brought him in and converted him to 3-4 outside linebacker opposite Von Miller. And I think we all know the result there. Chubb had double-digit sacks last year and put up a hell of a season. So this would be a bit concerning for Niner fans because the thought process heading into this was that whatever Arizona does at one, it won't involve Nick Bosa. And that, of course, would open up the door for the Niners at two to land the prize pass rusher out of Ohio State, which brings us to pick number two. According to Mel Kiper, if Nick Bosa is off the board,
had to build it up, Mo.
Josh Allen, outside linebacker from Kentucky, goes number two to the San Francisco 49ers. Here's what Mel Kiper has to say. Quote, if the Niners don't trade down to add up more picks, I expect them to take an edge rusher here. And Allen, parentheses, 6'5", 250 pounds, is just a step behind Bosa on my board. Two former first-round picks along the defensive line, Eric Armstead and Solomon Thomas, have struggled in San Francisco, but neither has the pure pass-rushing ability of Allen, who had 17 sacks and 5 forced fumbles last season. Allen would fill a glaring need. So, let's fast-forward, Dibs, to the end of April. The Arizona Cardinals are on the clock. They pick Ohio State defensive end Nick Bosa. The Niners are on the clock. They go to the podium. They take Kentucky pass rusher Josh Allen. How are we feeling right after that pick?
We're feeling hopeful, as we have for the past 4 years when they've taken a defensive lineman with their first pick. And you just hope that they get this one right because Solomon Thomas was overdrafted and Eric Armstead has been a slow developer. And hopefully he takes a step forward. So you're excited as you look at DeForest Buckner. And now you've got Armstead who's been improving. If Solomon Thomas can continue his trajectory that we saw toward the end of last year, maybe then you're excited. If this kid really is the pass rusher, the pass rushing specialist that he's made out to be, I think you're excited.
It's interesting because you look at Nick Bosa and you think about this, the family. Is he getting number one because of his pedigree or is it because he's the best pass rusher?
Oh, Eli Payton. That's
exactly.
Perfect
sentiments. When you agree, couldn't agree with you more. So now you're talking about a Josh Allen. Guy says a little bit taller. Guy says a little bit more lengthier, saying that he's probably a little bit better pure pass rusher. There's a lot out there to think Josh Allen's a better pass rusher. So I think that there's two folds here. Now you have a situation where a guy has a chip on his shoulder. He believes that especially if Bosa goes one and he goes two, I think he's going to be that guy that says, I think I should have been one. I think when you look at his stats and look at his numbers, they show that they jump off the board, you know, and he's like, look, I played the whole time. I didn't, you know, so it's going to be interesting how he's viewed throughout the National Football League. But I think that they win either way with Bosa, you know, his bloodline. But this Josh Allen kid, he can get after it. The guy, what he's been able to do, God, it's some pretty elaborate numbers.
There are only, this is my opinion, but there are only two positions in the NFL that you cannot solve in free agency. Free agency is a great tool for team building, but it does not solve all your problems. Free agency is something that supplements the draft. It complements the draft. It cannot be your approach to team building. It cannot be your primary focus. You build your team through the draft, and then you go to free agency to fill in the holes. Maybe every now and again you make a big splash, but by and large, that is how you round out your roster. That is how you make small incremental improvements on a year-to-year basis. You can find, again, in my opinion, just about a solution to every positional problem in free agency except for two. You do not find good quarterbacks in free agency. You do not find elite pass rushers in free agency. That's it. Go through history. The two positions that you draft, develop, and lock up at all costs are quarterbacks and pass rushers. Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees. Well, the Phillip Rivers thing kind of threw that one off, but then Phillip Rivers.
You know what you're saying.
Tom Brady. Go through all the great quarterbacks in the game.
They
do not get to free agency. Eli Manning.
Ben Roethlisberger, yeah.
Russell Wilson.
Just Matt Ryan, even.
Cam Newton.
Yeah.
Go through all of them. If you got a franchise guy, you are sticking with him no matter what. The same thing is now becoming true of pass rushers. We did this last week. Here is your top 10 NFL sack leaders from last season. Number one, Aaron Donald, drafted by the Rams, developed by the Rams, signed by the Rams. Number two, J.J. Watt, drafted by the Texans, developed by the Texans, signed by the Texans. Number three, Chris Jones in Kansas City, checks all the boxes. Number four, Von Miller in Denver. tied with Daniil Hunter in Minnesota. Those guys were drafted by the teams they still play for. Yep. Frank Clark, 6 with Seattle. He's going to be franchise tagged. Number 7, Miles Garrett in Cleveland. Number 8, Ryan Kerrigan in Washington. Dee Ford in Kansas City. Chandler Jones also tied there. Now, Chandler Jones was traded from New England to Arizona, so he's the one example. And then also tied for 10th place, TJ Watt, who was drafted and developed by the Pittsburgh Steelers. If you get a good pass rusher, and I know a lot of people want to look to Khalil Mack, that is the exception, not the rule. That is the outlier, and we all know how everyone feels about that trade.
Right, right.
You draft quarterbacks, you develop quarterbacks, you do not let them get to free agency. You draft pass rushers, you develop pass rushers, you do not let them get to free agency. You can find corners. You can find safeties, linebackers, and interior defensive linemen. You can find centers, guards, and tackles. Tackles are hard, but look at Philadelphia with Jason Peters. He became available, Buffalo didn't pay him. Boom, Pro Bowl year after year after year with the Eagles. That would probably be the third one, but you can find wide receivers and you can find running backs. These are the two positions you have to draft and develop. The Niners have their guy in Jimmy Garoppolo. At least that's what they believe. Now they've got to get their pass rusher.
Yeah.
And I like the idea of trading back, stocking up picks, all that. You have not gotten after the quarterback consistently for a long, long time. We got to go back to the Harbaugh era to find when you were good at bringing down the opposing quarterback. Allen's a guy a lot of people like. Bosa's a guy a lot of people like. I haven't watched a ton of tape on either. I've watched them play football.
Yeah.
If that's the guy, I don't want to hear about a trade back. I really don't. You need pass rushers. We've seen that. You need it, and history shows you right here how this plays out. So I don't see any other direction this team could be going. If Allen is right up there, 1B to Bosa's 1A, that's the guy at 2. Don't pick up the phone unless it's a deal that absolutely knocks your socks off. But I'll tell you what, you're still going to be expected to win next season. Still going to be expected to win.
So, go ahead, Lowe.
No, he's absolutely right. And you look around the National Football League and you look at certain guys. Yeah, you're right. Coaches and teams, they want to draft their guy and they want to make sure they draft the right quarterback. And goes to show you sometimes organizations don't necessarily draft the right guy, especially when at that position, whether it's pass rusher or it's quarterback. Look no further than Arizona. Did they get the right guy? Look no further than a team that went to the Super Bowl, the Rams. They're talking about, are they going to pick Jared Goff's option year up for $8 million? You have to make sure that when you draft that quarterback and that pass rusher, you want to make sure that is the guy because they are going to be the staple for your franchise. And now you see a couple teams that are wondering, did they get the right guy? So if I'm the San Francisco 49ers, you can't necessarily, just what Joe's talking about, trade back and say, I'm going to trade back to get more draft picks. No, if you got your guy and Josh Allen or Bosa's there, I think you get him. I think you absolutely get him, especially if you don't get a DeMarcus Lawrence that you can sit and pick up and say, God, if Dallas don't tag him, you can get him for 5 years. So you have a pass rusher like that. But if you don't, you definitely, without a doubt, you don't trade back.
Joe, which position is more can't miss at the top? Is it easier to find a defensive lineman, a pass rusher who's going to be can't miss, or is it easier to find a quarterback who potentially in that same spot is a can't miss?
This year's draft?
Just in general, you know, because I'm thinking about like Mitchell Trubisky and Jared Goff, these guys who go at the top of the draft, but then Baker Mayfield looks like that was a hit. Pass rusher-wise, it seems like there aren't as many, quote, busts among the top 3, 4, 5 guys. So is pass rusher more of a sure bet if you're going to fire one of these top draft picks?
That'd be a good study. You'd have to break it down between your 3-4 outside rushers and your 4-3 end rushers, and then you'd have to go back through. I mean, the first one that came to mind was Aaron Curry out of, I want to say Georgia Tech. Is that where Aaron Curry came from? He was somewhere on the East Coast. Wake Forest. Damn. Similar colors.
Nice, Cody.
Thank you, Cody. You can say that. Did he say that on air, too?
No, that was off air.
You deserve credit for it. You can say it on air.
It was Georgia Tech.
Say it, Cody.
That was the one guy that year that people were like, well, this is the guy that's the safest. Maybe he's not the best, but he's the safest. He turned out to be the biggest bust of the entire draft.
Yeah.
But by and large, pass rushers, if we're only talking outside guys, Von Miller was at the top of the food chain. Ended up playing pretty well.
Pass rushers are that's
Khalil Mack was the top of the food chain. J.J. Watt, top of the food chain.
They're more surefire, you would say.
By far. Not you can't even.
And this is a long way around for me to say, then the 49ers shouldn't trade back, because if there really only are two elite guys potentially, and everybody seems to think that Allen and Bosa are both elite, then it would be in your best interest to fire your draft pick on that guy, knowing that he probably won't be a bust.
Yeah, because quarterbacks, you can get shook in. Certain things can happen. You know, system quarterbacks that are great in college doesn't mean necessarily they're going to be great in pros. There's so many things surrounding. Look at Jameis Winston. So many guys in college you can look at and says, wow, they look great. The difference about an outside linebacker, guys that can get after quarterback, guys look at it and they look at athletic ability. Athletic ability can take you so far as a quarterback, but then it comes down to X's and O's. It comes back to, okay, well, can this guy read it? Can he go through this? How is he in a two-minute drill? There's so many different other things surrounding the quarterback position that makes them just mortal or makes them superstars. And you have a lot of these guys, they look great, athletic ability, all those different things. But what happens when it's on the line? How are they guys going to go with it? How are they going to do corners over? All these different things, disguising different coverages. How do they perform in that type of, look at Bortles, big, strong, fast, do all those things. But what happens?
Tannehill.
You look at so many of these guys. But if you get a pass rusher, a la the Devon Curse, all those guys, athletically, you watch them bend, you see if they got bend. You see how quick they are off the ball. You see if they can't get the tackle. They understand that things going to be noisy, whether you're home or away, and you watch that guy get off. You can watch tape, and I can look at the get off and say, man, he's got a fast, he's got a quick first step. I like this guy. So athletic ability, no question. It's like when you're a defensive guy, especially a pass rusher, you can say, see ball, get ball. It's pretty simple.
To Lowe's point, if you are a pass rusher and you forget all your responsibilities on the play, just rush after the quarterback. Make an athletic play, be an athlete, try to wreak havoc. If you're a quarterback and you forget your responsibilities, you are screwed. It is over. So, yeah, defensive players just – that's why they always say every year that defenses come together faster than offenses. If defenses break down, just fly to the football. Try to make a play.
Absolutely.
Offense is all about timing and precision and execution, and that's why it takes longer for them to develop than it does defenses. If you look at the rest of Mel's draft, number 3 to the New York Jets, Quinnen Williams, the defensive tackle from Alabama. Number 4 to the Oakland Raiders, Rashawn Gary, the defensive end from Michigan. Number 5 to Tampa Bay, Montez Sweat, defensive end from Mississippi State. You go play in Tampa Bay, you'll be sweating a whole hell of a lot.
Shit.
Number 6, the New York Giants land quarterback Dwayne Haskins out of Ohio State. So that would be the first QB off the board. This is, and anyone who's tried to do a mock, it seems easy. This is a very convenient pick for Mel. I don't think if you're going to target Dwayne Haskins, you're going to be able to just let him fall into your lap at 6. But for a mock draft sake, especially this early in the process, you can go ahead and slot that. 7, the Jacksonville Jaguars, Juwan Taylor, the offensive tackle out of Florida. 8, the Detroit Lions, TJ Hawkinson, the tight end out of Iowa. So you blew it with Eric Ebron, you go right back to the well. 9, the Buffalo Bills, DK Metcalf, the wide receiver out of Ole Miss. There is a photo of DK Metcalf that started circulating on the internet last week. The dude looks like the Incredible Hulk. He's standing next to jacked up dudes. He looks to be the biggest and the baddest of all of them. Look, come around the table. I'm going to show you this. Don't worry. You can speak into this mic. This is a wide receiver.
I've never seen you move so fast, yeah. Lo.
Ow! Which one is DK Metcalf?
Oh, my God.
That's him on the left. That is a wide receiver out of Ole Miss.
Yeeminy, criminy.
Good, okay. Good thing you came around the table for that. Don't touch me.
Oh, look at that, Dibs. Yeah, look at this guy.
The guy on the left is DK Metcalf.
He's no wide receiver.
What does he look like to you? He looks like Aaron Donald. He looks like a defensive tackle.
It looks like they photoshopped that. The guy doesn't look human. He looks half man and half monster. Oh, my God.
I mean, that's not a six-pack. That's like an 18-pack.
Is he 250? I mean, David Boston reincarnated, but David Boston had a lot of help. This guy did not get any
freak show. Now imagine that guy as a wide receiver. The kid out of Arizona State, I believe, is getting a lot of pub too, because the Niners are going to need to address the position one way, shape, or form. But yeah, that is DK Metcalf.
Wow,
shredded
monster,
huge.
Big.
Yeah, he can move some furniture.
Looks a little bit different than Steve Largent.
Yeah.
Or wow, Welker, or Amendola.
That's a big kid. I can't wait to watch him run at the combines, because that guy's got to be every bit of 6'3", 6'4", 250 pounds.
Huge.
I wonder what the bench press record is for wide receivers.
He's 6'4", 230 is what he's listed at. Zero body fat. First guy ever, 0% body fat.
I mean, diet test, Dibs. That's what I was saying. The kid's huge.
Huge.
Best big play receiver in the draft, according to Mel Kiper. So you need big plays. Number 10, the Denver Broncos, Greedy Williams, the cornerback out of LSU. Number 11, The Cincinnati Bengals, inside linebacker Devin White from LSU. Number 12, Marquise Brown, wide receiver, Oklahoma. Number 13, you'll notice I haven't mentioned his name yet, the Miami Dolphins' Kyler Murray, quarterback, Oklahoma. Do you see him falling this far in the draft?
No.
Because there's going to be a great over-under for us to play come draft day, boys.
I wonder where that over-under is going to go, where it's going to sit. But 13, that would probably be an over.
Going to throw something like 6.5 out there because the Giants need a quarterback. Teams could trade up, but also there's going to be a lot of speculation that he doesn't go that high when you have mocks like this out there. Jacksonville at play, depending on what they do, if they go after Nick Foles or one of the other potential free agent quarterbacks that's out there,
I think
13.
I think the Nick Foles free agent is going to be so fascinating. I can't wait the free agency starts. Just to see what happens. How do you view a guy that almost walked away from football and then comes back and say, wow, go wins a Super Bowl, looked at Tom Brady with the greatest quarterback of all time, went, you know, head-to-head and smoked him and made huge plays. He had some big plays, unbelievable plays. Watched him this past year come in a backup role, carry this team to the playoff, you know, and just watching what he's been able to do. How do you view this guy?
It's fascinating
to see what happens with free agency.
You view it based on the end of a story we saw play out in front of us last week. You view it just like Joe Flacco and the Ravens. He had a great run, small sample size. Everyone was very excited. The Ravens knew they shouldn't make that financial commitment to him, but they had no choice. They were nice and happy coming off a Super Bowl, and you realize we can't let him go. People would riot. They know that everyone knew that was the wrong decision. You do not give Flacco the long-term deal. He's not worth it. But he had that run, and they were forced into a corner, and they knew they had to do it, so they did it. And the results they got were exactly what you could have predicted. Average Joe the rest of the way out, never going to be able to put you on his back and win the game for you. If every box is checked, he might be able to make the play that gets you the win. But that's it. He did it for 4 games in the playoffs, and that was it. And it was a remarkable run that got you a Super Bowl. But that was a huge mistake. Foles, I love him. He brought me the first Super Bowl my whole life. But, I mean, he was not good in that Saints game. Go back to that Saints game. He was not good at all. He made a couple plays early but couldn't do anything late. And a lot of people are like that against the Saints. I get it. But by and large, if you're going to make a sizable investment in Nick Foles, you better have Doug Peterson's system in play, and you better have skill players all around you in the backfield, on the line, and at wide receiver. Because he's good if every single box is checked. And then even then, you're still going to need a little bit of help. Remember, the Eagles played some good defense that year, too.
Great defense.
What are you going to do? You're going to give them a first-round pick, a second-round pick, and then a $20 million a year over 5 years, $100 million deal, 40 guaranteed? If you're Jacksonville, can you take that risk?
No, you can't,
Jacksonville
Joe.
should be drafting a quarterback and resetting the clock. Get the franchise off on the right foot. Say it's a new era. We're done with Bortles. This is our guy. We're moving forward. And then it's a smart move as a GM or a coach because you've bought yourself 2 to 3 years of developing this kid. You bring in Foles, you have to win right away. I don't see that happening.
And that's the reason why I was asking that, because I think it's going to tie into this Kyler Murray kid, especially for Jacksonville and the Giants. Because now if you go out and you sign a Nick Foles, but follow me here, and you only sign him to a $15 million a year deal, you know, now you're looking at saying, now can I afford to bring in a rookie quarterback? If I brought in a veteran quarterback at $15 million, because now I know that I can look at it and say, this guy that's not starting quarterback money. It's a good deal. You do a 2-year deal or 3-year deal with a Foles like that at $15 million. Now I think you still can look at a Kyler Murray and say, God, okay, he still can go to Jacksonville. If the Giants do it, he still can go to the Giants. So it's going to be interesting how that works out.
But with the Giants sitting on Eli Manning, would that take them out of possibly being a destination for Nick Foles, or would they be looking to move on from Eli? Because you're not going to have Eli, Nick Foles, and draft a quarterback, are you?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Well, if the Giants move on from him now, you can bring in a Nick Foles and say, okay, he's a good teacher. Okay, he's a good deal. But then it's at a discount. And that's why I'm saying if you pay him that backup, that 15 to 17 million where these backups are getting are the middle of the road quarterbacks, now you can afford to draft a quarterback.
The beauty of the first round quarterback is that it resets everybody's clock. Everybody gets a fresh start with a first-round quarterback because there's going to be time. Hugh Jackson was like the only guy that couldn't make that work because he didn't want to play Baker Mayfield. Right. He wanted him, and then he didn't want him. It was a mess, and that's why that situation played out the way it did. But when you find yourself jammed up like this, I mean, Who are we talking about as a potential candidate to find himself onto the open market? Going into last year, John Harbaugh was one of those names where it was like, well, it's coming up on the end of the deal.
Yep.
Maybe it's one of those Andy Reid Philadelphia situations where everyone loves you, but it's just gotten a little stale and it's time to start something fresh. And then they went out and drafted Lamar Jackson. And then halfway through the season, they transitioned to Jackson. It looked good. Now all of a sudden, Harbaugh gets his extension. People want to see what he can do with Lamar Jackson. Sure, it was a rough game against the Chargers in the playoffs, but no big deal. Young kid had a rough game. Maybe, just maybe, he can be developed. But that restarts the clock for everybody. Coaches, GMs, everybody gets a fresh start. If you're Jacksonville, why are you going to screw around with one of these veterans? Well, we got to make it happen now because we spent all that money on the defensive side. That's on you for misevaluating Bortles to begin with. There's a domino effect for this. When you make one mistake at the top, you're going to let it trickle down. It's going to kill you. You were close. You had it. But you stuck with the guy another year and you gave him the extension when you shouldn't have. And you paid for it mightily last year. Now they're panicking and they've got to go out and get a quarterback this season. But what are you going to do? You're going to leapfrog the Giants because that's the only way you're getting a quarterback. And the Giants, to your question earlier, Dibs, I don't know if Kyler Murray is going to fit their system. We talked about this last year. The Giants are all about big, physical, and fast.
Right.
That's kind of the whole
the blueprint, basically.
Yeah, that's what they want to put out there. As a team, some teams want to be speed teams. Some teams want to be, I don't want to say finesse, but when you look at some of these wide open, spread them out teams, then there are the teams like the Giants. They kind of want to cram it down your throat with Barkley.
Yeah.
They want to play good physical defense, and they want to grind you out 20-17. So he doesn't really fit the George Young model of scouting, but you never know. Maybe they decide to try something.
Yeah, and you always mention accurately that you want to build your team for your division, and it seems like that division, the NFC East, is one where you have to be physical, and so maybe a smaller statured quarterback isn't exactly the fit, but as you know, the Hoskins kid or the Haskins kid at Ohio State, maybe he fits the blueprint.
But my God, what kind of pressure would that put on the opponent, the opposing defense? Now you
with
got
Saquon and Kyler,
Saquon and Kyler
and OBJ.
Have fun, because if you come after this kid, bye bye. You can't just sit back there and rush him. If you rush him, you see the speed. The guy, what Joe talked about, running 4.4. You running that fast? Safeties, corners, you're getting left.
He buys an extra 2 seconds for Odell Beckham. How wide open is he going to be 90% of the time?
So now defenses aren't just going to rush. So they're going to pressure rush, and they're going to try to get their hands up to knock down passes. So now you're talking about being given add another twist to that offense.
It's fascinating when you mention him at 13 and how all of this is going to lead up to the draft, whether or not Kyler Murray, all the hype, if he goes up the draft board or if he sits where he is, what does he do at the combine? How do the offseason moves affect where he goes? I think the Kyler Murray draft position is maybe the most fascinating part of this upcoming draft.
Right now, for sure. Absolutely. And then by the time we get there, I can't see what's going to happen between now and then to make something more intriguing. There will be one of these quarterback prospects that gets a little bit more love, the kid from Duke or the kid from Missouri, Drew Lock. But by and large, that's going to be the one that everyone's focused on. He has the most attention, and he's got
to
capitalize on this from an endorsement standpoint.
I want Arizona to do it.
Kyler Murray should already be endorsing products. Nike, the fact that they don't have a two-sport campaign for him already, kind of shocking right now, to be honest with you.
Yeah, Arizona, please get him, because now the San Francisco 49ers own the clock. And now, okay, and now the Giants, and now Giants, you look at the Giants and you look at who right behind them, Jacksonville. What do you want? Do you really want Haskins? Who really wants him? And now show me what you're working with. So if you look at
then you're passing up on Bosa and Allen.
But if you're there, now if it's rumored, if Mel's guy think that they're going to take the
Raiders want a pass rusher at 4. So if you move beyond the Raiders, one of the pass rushers is gone right there.
Yeah.
Can't have it all, buddy.
You can't.
Look at you trying to figure everything out.
I
want Allen and Bosa and Murray and all of them, too.
I don't want
it. It'd be nice.
Unfortunately,
that's not how this works out. You are listening to 95.7 The Game.
Let's get legal, Joe. Let's get legal.
FM and HD1, KGMZ San Francisco, a radio.com sports station. Good morning. Welcome to Joe Lowe and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. This is your 8 o'clock hour. In 27 minutes at 8:30, John Heyman, MLB insider for the MLB Network, will join us to talk all things Bryce Harper. What's the latest? When should we expect an announcement? Selfishly, I was hoping for that.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.